Welcome to the Barth Calderone Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Welcome, everybody, to Wealth Protector TV. My name is Paul Hitchcock. I'm with the Asset Protection, Estate Planning, and Business Planning firm, Barth Calderone. Really excited for this episode today. I have two incredible guests. I have James Wynn, who is a top attorney at Barth Calderone, so my colleague. And I have Alexandra Alvarado, who is the Director of Marketing and Education for the largest association in the United States for rental property owners, the American Apartment Owners Association. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and this, we're going to jump into this. This is going to be some hot topic content on coming from James on asset protection. Maybe we're touching on estate planning. For Alexandra, we're going to get into what you're focused on there with your organization and what we want rental property owners to know. Alexandra, let's start with you. What's on your mind? What's hot?
Well, what seems to still be hot, or at least stabilizing a little, but still good, is multifamily investment, as always. You know, one of the new things that we did this year that we really wanted to help our landlords with is helping them through the whole investment cycle, from the point of listing a property to buying one off market. If it's not already listed, getting an opportunity from our members, and also, you know, being able to sell. So we're really helping landlords at this point to buy and sell investment property. That's something we hadn't done before this year. We had been involved mostly in just management of the property. So like once you acquire it. So now we have our own brokerage. We've partnered with like over 50 different agents across the country and brokers. Wow. So we're hoping to really assist people in that process and in also the financing aspect of it, the insurance aspect, really closing like the loop on investment and making their portfolio stronger and better. And, you know, despite the rising interest rates, rents are still rising. And we're seeing that it's still, you know, a solid investment to make in multifamily at this time. So we're still really focusing on that right now.
And now, really, let me ask you real quick. So how, if someone's buying and selling, so they contact you initially and then you kind of run them through onboarding and find out what's going on?
Yeah, exactly. So we would advertise their property if they're listing it for sale to all of our members. So we, you know, blast it out in our newsletter. We put it up on our site. And then any of our members who likewise are looking for an investment property, they can then, you know, see those properties that other members are selling and jump on that opportunity sometimes before anybody else.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. No, awesome. And you have a huge membership too. What's your membership now?
135,000.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah. Great. Okay. Good. Good to know. Yeah. I'm glad we're getting that message out.
Definitely. Oh.
Yeah, go ahead. So what else you got?
No, so I was going to say it's on our site. So if you go to real estate on our site, we created a new tab for it, which, you know, if you want to go to aawa.com, you can see it there.
Okay, perfect. So buying and selling property. And then what about people you're dealing with? Are there regulatory issues that people are focused on? Or, you know, what else are you hearing with conversations and that you're having with your membership?
Yeah. So we're really big on tenant screening, as you know. That's one of our, you know, products that we sell to our landlords, helping them reduce their risk if they are, you know, looking to screen a tenant. Obviously, that's going to be a resource that they can come to us for. But there's some interesting things happening in the tenant screening side of things that I don't think a lot of landlords are aware of. One is that last month, basically, all the credit bureaus agreed to remove medical collections that are under a certain amount, under $500, from credit reports, and also to not report these medical collections if they're like they have to be older than a year, I believe, to get reported. So what we're seeing actually is an increase in tenant credit scores, which I think is a good thing because medical debt has been tying people down for a long time. But a lot of landlords aren't aware that's going to be reported less and less moving forward.
Wow. Interesting. And that's across the country?
Yep. Everybody's credit reports already have received a boost if they had a medical collection on there and the credit bureaus found that it didn't meet the criteria anymore. Those have been removed. So that's pretty interesting. I think something that's, you know, been in the works for a while. The other thing that's interesting, also related sort of to credit reports, is the increase in landlords being able to report rent payments on a credit report. It used to be very difficult to do unless you were like a huge company. You couldn't put like a line item on somebody's credit report showing whether or not they paid rent.
Oh.
So now actually it's the opposite. The federal government really wants landlords to report it. They think it will help tenants to build credit to then make them homeowners, which we know right now getting first-time buyers into the market is more difficult because of rising interest rates and rising prices. So they're trying to make it easier for renters to become homeowners by building credit through paying rent. And in fact, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are actually offering a reduction in closing costs for multifamily investors who promise to do that.
Very interesting. I want to ask you about that. So, like for my daughter's renting, for example, right? Wants to be a homeowner at some point. So are you saying that she could go to her landlord, say, hey, I'd like you to put this on my credit report? And do people have a credit report if they don't own anything yet? You know, she's in college, doesn't own anything. Does she have a credit report that a landlord could put it on there? Or...
Well, she could basically start one by opening up a credit card or taking out a loan. If she has a student loan, she has in her name, she has credit.
Got it. Okay.
So that would be probably the only thing on her report. Okay. Really the ideal thing would be to open up a line of credit of some sort to show some sort of positive payment history. But then also in a situation like this, it would be perfect for a landlord to report it. That would really help her credit score go up. And especially if over the course of many years, like of renting, and then she's ready to be a homeowner, it's going to make it a lot easier for renters, I think, to get their scores up. And also, you know, it's kind of crazy. It's one of the biggest bills that renters pay.
Right.
And for landlords, likewise, it's the most important piece of information when they're screening a tenant, whether or not they paid rent. And technically there's no way to know, right? By looking at a credit report, you have to ask the previous landlord and call them, get a hold of them.
Right.
You have, or maybe like you're looking at, you know, a paycheck and trying to determine if they could afford it, not knowing whether or not or how much they were paying before.
Is it easy for the landlord to report it on a credit thing, or is it arduous for them?
It depends. So if they already have software set up, a lot of softwares are now integrating with that kind of feature. And then also there are some like standalone services where they could go to just report basically on an Excel doc, you know, what the tenant has paid as like a ledger. And then there is a cost to it, of course, right? So the closing cost concessions that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are giving is assuming that the landlord would take that cost. The cost is pretty low though. They usually charge per tenant like a few dollars, maybe $5 to $10. And then the tenant in some cases can opt to pay for it if they want. So that's something that if the tenant brought up to the landlord, ultimately it's up to the landlord to decide whether or not they're going to do it. The tenant can't do it on their own, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, no, very interesting. And you mentioned the property management business you have too. Tell me a little bit about that. What's going on there?
Yeah. So I think mostly, you know, from our perspective, it's providing a DIY kind of self-help property management tools, right? So landlords don't necessarily have to go out and hire a property management company to take a large percentage of what they're making every month, right?
Right.
In some cases, you know, it does make sense to have a property manager, especially if they're very remote, but at the same time, you know, it is possible to remotely manage your property yourself. So we do the tenant screening, all of the legal forms, the education around it. We have, you know, attorneys that people can chat with. We always refer Barth Calderon for estate planning, but, you know, for like evictions and that kind of thing. And then we also have just launched our property management software page where we have a couple of recommended software providers. So those are really great for like accounting and maintenance requests, something that we don't do on our end, but you could easily do through like a software. And you pay for that monthly usually, but it's pretty low cost, at least the one options that we chose for our members to, you know, recommend.
Yeah.
They are affordable. They're not meant for like huge corporations.
Right,
they're
right.
meant for like smaller mom and pop DIY kind of, you know, landlords.
Got it. And Alexander, your base of members, are they mostly single family homeowners or is it all over the map?
It's all over the map, you know, and a lot of them have a mix as well. So, you know, they might have a portfolio with a lot of different types of properties, even commercial in some cases.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Excellent. Great information. I've got to tell people that you've got to get connected to Alexandra. Her information is going to be around this video, wherever you're watching this, because we're going to stream everywhere, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, Zoom, and of course, our network through Barth Calderon. But get connected with her. Find out the resources here. We'll have the website up. Just incredible. We've been doing a lot of stuff with you for years, and the education, the content you put out there to help people is amazing. And I want to get into James here now because, James, we've got some big issues here, around asset protection, estate planning for property owners. And I want to talk about your hot button issues here. What are we diving into?
Absolutely. So there's a couple things that I've been seeing recently, but I want to start with a couple basic items here. Just so we all start from the same page. I still see a lot of people who just start to acquire their first investment property or just diving into the rental property field. They're purchasing the properties in their own names to start, which isn't necessarily a good thing. My rule of thumb is if a property is in your own name, you're holding it wrong. Should at least be inside of your living trust. Or if it's a rental property, then it should be inside of some sort of LLC or partnership, a limited partnership.
Yeah, because James, you and I talk a lot offline, and Alexander, I know you know this too, but people a lot of times don't tend to treat their properties like a business, right? Maybe they inherited it. It's been in the family forever. You know, they've got people and human beings and kids living in it, so it doesn't seem like a business. But this gets to your point of you got to have the proper legal structure around it, the LLC, if it's a rental, because, you know, you wouldn't own something in your own name if you had a different business selling widgets or have an Amazon business. It wouldn't be in your own name. You for sure would have it as a business entity, but property is the same way, right?
Absolutely. And the whole purpose of that is to, well, there's a couple purpose of having it inside of the LLC.
Yeah.
First one is, so any landlord-tenant issue doesn't seep out of that entity and go to your personal asset. You don't want to jeopardize your home, your bank accounts, your retirement potentially, just because of a landlord-tenant issue that you had from your investment property. So yes, absolutely, we should have, usually it's an LLC around each of these rental properties.
Yeah, and I got to say too there, just as an example, because it's a fairly recent case, and Alexander, we're working on this at the firm, and this is good for your audience to hear, is we're seeing a lot of mold claims, an increase in that. And we have a client, landlord, and they had a 20-year tenant. It was a mom and a daughter, and they complained about mold, and there was mold. And the landlord had it cleaned up, didn't think it was a big deal. Health department said fine, you know, and the lawsuit came, and it was, you know, a big one. The landlord said, this is bogus, tried to fight it, didn't have asset protection, fought it, and lost. It was a $3 million liability to the landlord. It was $800,000 to the tenant, and then it was, the rest was attorney's fees the landlord had to pay. And the insurance company said, we're not touching this because of the way the mold developed. You know, they always try to get out of things. the landlord's going to lose a bit the property, you know. So these things are real. You never see them coming. But, you know, that mold claim then can not only attack the equity in the property, but it goes to everything, your home. James, you know, James described
correct.
That can go everywhere, correct?
Everywhere, home, brokerage accounts, bank accounts, even sometimes life insurance, depends on where you live, retirement plans and types of retirement plans. Yes, it can affect everything. And you're right, it is an exclusion in that insurance coverage. So you don't have any help paying off that type of claim either.
So the mold stuff can be an exclusion in the insurance policy?
It usually is.
Oh, it usually right. is. Okay. Okay. Yep. Got
and
it.
Your so, umbrella policy won't cover that either. So yeah, that it's, you know, insurance is great, but there's a lot of exclusions involved in there. So it's good to have the proper legal structure around it too.
And James, that, and so that's containing, if they had an LLC, that would contain that liability to the property. But then there's also that's the inside liability you talk
correct.
About, the outside liability. Explain the outside liability that the LLC helps with also.
Sure. So the outside liability is when the owner themselves, unrelated to the property, gets sued. So unrelated to the property, you're driving down the freeway, took out a bus full of lawyers, and they all sued you. Well, they're going to go after your assets. So before, if you just had the property, the rental property in your own name, they just foreclose the property and take that equity from you. With an LLC, if it's properly structured, then the best that they can do is put a lien over the LLC interest. And so they can't go in and foreclose that property anymore, but they just can put a lien over any distributions, which isn't the best, but it still sets you up in a better situation where you don't lose the property. You can help at least attempt to negotiate a settlement in that case.
And here's an example of that. And actually, this is a call I got yesterday. I feel it helps if you can really see how this plays out in real life. But this was a business owner of a construction company in Southern California and has 7 personal guarantees that he signed as part of his business. It's got a S corporation business. And sign these personal guarantees for equipment and so forth for his company. And he hit hard times, and the notes are being called, and they're looking to satisfy the notes. He doesn't have the money. He owns rental property. He's got investment accounts, and they are attacking his rental properties. This had nothing to do with his rental properties. This is his business, these personal guarantees. They're going after his rental properties. That's an outside liability. And he's very nervous. So I think, James, you know, echoing what you're saying, probably a good example of that.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what we're trying to protect with just that LLC over that rental property.
Yeah, so okay, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the basic issues that we've been seeing still. One of the more advanced issues that I've been seeing is people are starting to transfer the properties from, you know, their generation to the next generation. Mm-hmm. And right now, before 2026 comes in, we have a high estate tax exemption. Well, what that means is, under current law, at least, you're allowed to give away around $12 million, maybe about $12.5 million this year to anybody, including children. And you can pass that wealth down to the next generation. You can combine that up with married couples, so about $24 million.
It's a huge number, so it's a massive number, yeah. Okay.
But that gets cut in half in 2026. So after 2026, you're only allowed to probably transfer about $6 million to the next generation per person. So people are taking the time to move over the larger assets, such as rental properties, to that next generation while they still have a large exemption.
Got it. Is that $6 million is there potentially that comes down even lower?
Depends on politics. So it gets punted around often. So they might raise it higher, they may raise it lower, but usually if the government turns low more blue, then they try to decrease that exemption amount. When it turns a little more red, it increases it up that amount. But when it's mixed, they tend to just get, there's usually a standstill. So
got it.
Yeah. The default right now is just, it's going to sunset to half that amount without any political intervention.
So it's happening. It's going to happen. And yeah, and the discussion here is, Alexandria, as we've worked with quite a few AAOA members on their property, this comes up a lot because a lot of them come to us and they don't have any estate plan in place. And there's a misconception that estate planning is for multimillionaires and billionaires. Oh, it's for Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, et cetera, et cetera. But what they find out, what we try to educate people on, is everybody's got an estate. You know, and especially if you own a rental property, you have an estate. And without having your estate plan in place, as James will tell you, you're letting the governments and the courts step in to make personal decisions about your assets. And so as you're trying to decide, you know, is this a legacy property? It goes to the next generation. How do I mitigate taxes? You know, all these things, that's estate planning. And so, you know, getting the living trust and so forth in place is one of the main issues we're helping AAOA members with.
Yeah, and just to help even clarify that piece, if you have more than $160,000 of assets to your name, not including liabilities, you just gross assets, you need a trust of some sort. So that would be an easy threshold for any property owner to have to accomplish.
Yes, I'm sure all of our members meet that threshold. Right. And I really do appreciate the information that you all provide to our members, because I do agree that not enough of them are aware of that. One of the questions we received for our last Rent magazine issue was, and I think you guys answered it for us, was, you know, if I have insurance, why do I need an LLC? And we get similar kind of questions about estate planning, where it seems like, you know, we still keep getting those types of questions, and you know, we just have to keep bringing that message home. I don't want to see anybody's property foreclosed. I don't want to see anybody have to pay more in taxes just for, you know, their heirs to inherit the hard work that they've done. So, you know, for us, it's so important to get that message out. And the way you said it, James, is just so, so succinct. And I think really important for everyone to hear.
Thank you.
Yeah. And James, maybe you expand on that, because that is a question that came up in your Rent magazine. And by the way, we're going to include that link to the Rent magazine for everybody here on the video. Yeah. But James, what about that insurance question? You know, why do I need LLC?
Yeah, you kind of hit on it before with your last example about the mold. You know, there are a lot of exclusions in the insurance. Says, you know, if you want to take the time, open up your umbrella insurance or liability insurance and look for the exclusion pages. There's about 5-6 pages of really big exclusions. They don't include, you know, punitive damages, exemplary damages, special damages, mold, asbestos, things of that nature. There's a lot of exclusions in them. So the legal structure, and I wouldn't recommend having just the LLC without the insurance either. It's a marriage of the both of them that you need to have proper asset protection. Even with the proper legal structure, you have an LLC. You want to be able to drive creditors to the insurance company, because if you don't have a pot of gold, so to speak, for a plaintiff to go after, then they're just going to go after you, even though they might lose. So, because they have nothing to lose. So it's best to have a combination of both insurance and the legal structure.
Yeah. And James, on this point, something came up in a workshop we actually did yesterday when we were doing it with the insurance expert, Morton. Talk about that issue that came up about how to structure, you know, the policy, the named insured.
Right, right.
You know, what was that about?
Sure. When you purchase a property in your own name and we have to transfer it into an LLC, another step that is commonly missed is to update your insurance and make sure that the insurance has the LLC name as a named insured. So that's just another step that you have to take And it doesn't hurt to double check to make sure that the LLC is a name insured on your policies.
Yeah, Alexander, we did a workshop and had an insurance expert. This was a very important point because this guy said, I see this mistake all the time, and the insurance isn't where it needs to be because they haven't taken this step. So it was very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, we work with an insurance broker, Insurance Hub, on our site. They do free reviews of anyone's insurance policy.
Awesome.
And I'm like, gosh, if you don't know what's on your insurance policy, you know, and then you have to find out the hard way, that's going to be tough. And I think also too, people who have had the same policy and never shopped around, you know, they have no idea. Maybe their assets have changed, but the policy is not any different, or they added, like you said, if something like an LLC didn't add it to the insurance. So yeah, I mean, simple mistakes that really could just be avoided.
Yeah. So, yeah. And it's interesting because I'm thinking of the case we had with a rental property owner. She owned a really nice Victorian, and on the property in the back was a unit she was renting out. So it was on the property and it was a legal unit, and she had insurance. She thought the right insurance, but the person that was renting this unit was a physical therapist who had an office offsite where she would see patients. Well, she was having some patients come to her space at this Victorian to do her work. The landlord knew about it, was allowing it, and somebody got hurt on the property. There's some construction going on, got hurt, and there was a claim. It was a pretty sizable claim. She went to her insurance, the landlord, because that claim always works up to the landlord. And the insurance person said, wait a minute, you don't have a business policy here. You have a residential policy. You never told us you were allowing people a business work going on at the house. You have no coverage. She had the wrong type of insurance. And so insurance was out, 100% personal liability to her. So just another example of you got to pay attention to these things.
Yeah.
James, as we're anything else we want to put out there as we're hitting up to our time limit here?
Oh, there's so much to talk about.
That's, a ton.
No, I think we'll save it for the next seminar.
Okay, perfect. Well, this is great. And this is a good, you know, broad brushstroke. We hit some details to get people thinking. And just a refresher on what's important. Alexandra, great information on your group. Thank you so much. James, thanks for being here. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And stay tuned because we're going to have more content like this all the time. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.
All right.